Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
It's Donkey Kong, the arcade sensation, and now you can play it at home.
Hang on, sweetheart, I'm gonna save ya!
Now you can play Donkey Kong on your ColecoVision, Atari VCS, or Intellivision video game system. Donkey Kong has multiple screens, just like the arcade game.
You're not gonna stop me, you stupid ape!
Play Donkey Kong on your ColecoVision, Atari VCS, or Intellivision video game system.
Don't worry, darling! I'll save you!
Help me!
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Play Retro. I assume you came last time. Some people hate it when I say welcome back on shows because, you know, I don't know if they've really been here before. So I should probably stop saying that. I don't know, Brian. What do you
think?
It's
fine.
Yeah. You think it's fine? Is it just a faux pas of the modern podcasting world and I should just accept my mistakes and my flaws?
It's fine. It's, if you want to feel welcome back, you can. And if not, that's fine, too.
All right. Fair enough. Welcome to Play Retro, where we play retro. That's right. We talk about the retro games. And today's no different. I should probably do the full intro. Hi, and welcome to Play Retro. I'm your host, Scott Johnson. And I have a feeling this monkey is neither Donkey nor Kong.
No, and I am your other host, Brian Dunaway. My pockets are heavy with coin, and my head is light from standing up too fast.
Yeah, still with the COVID over there, Brian. Still got the bit of
yeah,
the COVID.
Plus, you know, I like to play the cocktail games. I like to play where I'm looking down for like half an hour, and then, you know, suddenly getting up. Oh!
Yeah,
oh,
I feel you.
Not good.
Do you think maybe it'd be cool if you had original flavor COVID, because then it would be kind of retro. You know what I mean? It's not one of these new variants.
Yeah, it would totally be retro. That's like totally 2020.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic. That's retro when it comes to viruses.
Yeah, kind of like that. Well, as communicable as you are, we're happy to have you here. And we're going to get right into it. So real quick, before we get started, I have been talking about this cabinet that my dad built all those years ago and me wanting to rework it and figure out what to do with it. I'm happy to report. I should have made pictures. I didn't. But I cleared everything around it that was around it in the garage. It turned out to be a bit of furniture out there, kind of just sitting there holding things. That's all out of the way. And I began the process of gutting it.
Oh, the process.
Yeah, I'm gutting it. Now, I need some advice, and I hope some listeners may email in some advice, some that are just maybe, I don't know, electrically inclined, okay?
Yes.
I'm finding a lot of, like, weird, conflicting information on the internet. I need to know what I need to do with that transformer. Can I handle it? It's been, I think it hasn't been turned on for 30-plus years. So,
right. So is it gun-shaped or is it semi-truck-shaped? What kind of transformer are you talking about?
It's a gun. Wait, I like this. Decepticons are all right, but I think I'm more of an Autobots kind of guy. So I guess it's truck shaped in the end.
That's safe. Safe.
You think it's safe? Okay. So just roll out.
No problem with, by the way, no problem with scale over in the Transformers universe.
No.
One's a gun. One's a freaking semi truck.
Yeah.
What?
One's a tape player that has tiny tapes, unless you're standing next to him and then he's gigantic with huge tapes. Yeah. Doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I don't know if I just don't want to touch stuff and have myself shocked or do something dumb to cause a fire or something weird. I just need to gut it and then figure out how to dispose of some of this stuff. And that would include the transformer, the existing CRT, which is dead. It's not working.
Oh, no.
Well, I knew that. It's not a big deal. But right. I want to replace that with, you know, a decent LED something. And then basically, I just want to empty the thing minus buttons and stuff. I'm going to try to use the original buttons if I can. I'm not sure I'll be able to because those aren't going to interface. I'm going to have to rewire them. But I do like the idea of those staying there if I can work it.
Yeah, that would be a kick, right? Mm-hmm. But buttons are so fairly inexpensive, and I have a feeling maybe more responsive. I can't say for sure. I'm sure we got some. Hey, if you're out there and you're a hardcore arcade builder, let us know at playretroshow@gmail.com. We probably want to pick your brain. But yeah, I don't think there's is there any advantage to using old hardware like that? It seems a pretty simple mechanism that would translate better new.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're kind of the same. The new buttons you'd buy today look the same. I just like that these were actually in an arcade and got a ton of use and are sort of banged up, you know? I kind of like that. It's like it's how I like my Star Wars. I like dirty shit on my ships, not clean, shiny ships. So anyway, my thinking is probably going to have to redo it anyway. Also, because the configuration on this thing is a left and a right button, a one-player, single-player button choice in the middle, and then a single like fire button on the other side. So it's really limited in terms of control schemes.
What was this originally?
I think this was a Galaxian.
Galaxian.
That it may have also been the same cabinet we had the Kamikaze 3 thing in there, which was complete ripoff, like, you know, I don't even know what to call it, black market thing that was sort of like Galaxian, but sort of hacked and not legal.
Right.
We had that for a while. That might be what's in there right now, actually. And I'm going to keep the main board for no reason other than it doesn't work, but I want to just like hang it up somewhere, just make kind of a big deal about it. Like, this is what this used to be.
There you go.
Maybe do one of those glass post framings things where I can just kind of have it inset in there.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. But the way Galaxian worked, you could do it with a joystick or just left, right, but there was no up or down. So the button configuration on this worked for that, but I'm going to want to have more than that. I'm going to want to have, you know, an 8-way stick and probably enough buttons for a fighting game and, you know, maybe even a ball like yours. Hell, maybe I'll get two of those Atari things and repaint them and stick them in there. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But it's
I like the Atari thing. It's pretty simple. I mean, it really does just replace the console there on the
main machine. Goal here is I want to do two things. I want to have a cool retro machine,
right?
But I also want to stay true to this thing my dad made, you know? I don't want to F with it too much, or I may as well just start over with some new wood and whatever. But the fact that he built these by his own hands, wired them all himself, like this whole thing is his. I'm trying to preserve that as best I can and still have it be functional. So,
because that'll mean something to you. But honestly, if you're thinking about handing it down, it's going to mean something to your kids if you just completely start from scratch, right?
Yeah, that's true.
They don't care.
Yeah, they don't give a poo. Yeah, you know, I mean, they might actually. I don't know.
Yeah, they probably have a greater connection to you than they do their grandfather. So, I mean.
Yeah, that's actually true. He died before Nick was even 2 months old. So,
right.
So, yeah, my kids are, you know, well, the girls knew him better. But anyway, the point is progress is being made is what I'm getting at.
Yes.
Even if that thing ends up just being a cool piece of furniture with a story attached to it, that might even be okay on its own. But I still want to gut it because there's no point in having all those ancient electronics in there, mercury and other bullshit that'll be leaking out of there at some point. Like, I don't want to deal with all that.
Right.
So
I think gutting is the best plan.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever watch any builds or anything, that's usually the first thing they do. It's like, okay, let's get everything out.
Yeah.
Take a look at it. Throw away the crap.
Now, speaking of making things that we get inspired by because of retro gaming, you did something.
Right.
And I can't tell if it's because you've been in a haze of illness or if you really just made something rad. So tell us what you did.
I wouldn't say it's something rad, but it really made me happy. So, you know, I've been trying to figure out how to move around my office more. And today I actually picked up a XLR to like wireless adapter. But before I did that, I said, how can I move around my office and be able to speak to people and have a microphone and headset and everything. And I'm like, you know what? I can kind of do that with my Xbox Series controller. I can plug that in. I got the little wireless adapter that plugs in. And I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. But I don't want to walk around carrying it. So I Dremeled out the back plate and put a couple of things on there, including Velcro. And then I attach it to my posture checker.
Okay, everyone listen to the podcast. You can't see this, but Brian has Velcroed an Xbox Series SX controller to his shoulder, therefore making it the Series Sex controller, because that's badass.
The series sexy, because this is kind of like how this is what they basically do with, you know, military stuff. There's a bunch of Velcro crap. You just attach everything to your vest. And so that's what I did here. I made it so that I could walk around with it and do it. And, you know, I don't usually get that bug when I'm just playing regular video games, but for some reason, retro requires me to think outside the box and try to figure out solutions to problems.
See, that's funny, because I would totally agree. Like, there's something about modern gaming that's just all kind of done for you, and it's great. Right. We've come a long way, and part of that is because we didn't like having to manually tweak everything back in the day. But when you start talking about where we came from, where all this stuff came from, it's really fun to get into the nitty and the gritty, man. Poke around in there, and that's what you've done. Look at you.
Look at me. I was like trying to think of what it would be called. I was like, what would you call something like that? I'm like, is it like a controller bandolier or something? Somebody made some of those too, but it was basically just somebody took a belt and attached a bunch of stuff to it. And I said, that looks stupid.
Yeah.
And so I said, this looks much less stupid.
Tear it off. Right? So tear it off by your microphone so people can hear it.
Yeah.
Here you go.
There. Did you get any of that?
Yeah, we got that. We got it. We're good. It's cool. Right. I think it's very cool. And I love that you did that. And I'm still trying to think about how it will actually matter. Like, you need to do this with get a PS5. So you got your PS5 controller attached, get a PS4 and a 360 controller, get a mouse and a keyboard, and like just look like some kind of freak, dude. I'm in. Let it fly.
I'm on it.
Yeah,
I'm going to let your freak fly.
That's really great.
Freak flag fly.
All right. Well, as you can tell, we're excited to be here today. We may as well get right to it. Our big game of the week.
Shall we play a game?
Yes. And the game we're going to play, or it's actually three of them, but it's the topic lends itself well to kind of a singular topic, and that is the original Donkey Kong arcade releases. We're talking Donkey Kong 1, Jr., and DK3, which a lot of people do not remember Donkey Kong 3. Right. Boy, do I have stuff to say about Donkey Kong 3 as opposed to the other two. We'll get to all of that in a second. It turns out, Brian and I think we actually kind of agree on this.
I actually didn't think anybody remembered Donkey Kong 3 besides myself. And I was kind of shocked when you said that you loved it. And I'm like, what, are you kidding me? I loved it. No wonder we're such good friends.
Yeah, no wonder we're pals at all. It turns out we both love things that are cool. And one of the things we like is Donkey Kong 3, which was kind of panned at the time. Nobody was into it. Was nothing like Donkey Kong 1 or 2, well, 2 being Junior. Yet it's the one I will play the most now. Like, if you said, hey, Scott, you want to play one of these now? I'd rather play Donkey Kong 3 than any of them. And Mario's nowhere near this damn thing. It's some, what's his name? Do we have his name in here? Who's the character?
Stanley, right? Is Stanley, is Mario and Luigi's cousin, I believe. And he was on some Game & Watch things as well. But he is, he basically is a bug exterminator.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. His job is, okay, so the way it worked is, in Donkey Kong 1, we'll get to all the big details here in a second, but just the overall here. In the original Donkey Kong game, it's Jumpman, a.k.a. Mario, soon to be Mario, but he wasn't that yet. It was Jumpman. Jumpman was trying to save the princess from Donkey Kong, all right?
Well, she wasn't really a princess as much as the girlfriend, Pauline,
just
right?
Just the girlfriend.
We won't break down that just yet.
Yeah, that stuff got... The lore is very weird in that world, so don't get too worked up about it. But in Junior, or so in that one, you're the hero as Jumpman. In Junior, the baby monkey is the hero trying to save Donkey Kong from Jumpman, who has successfully caged and tried to domesticate the beast. And so Mario is now the villain. You don't actually play him. And then in 3, you're thinking,
the first and only
time. Yeah. And then in 3, you're thinking, oh, well, I know how 3 is going to go. 3 is going to be me playing... 3 is going to be me playing this game with Mario.
I'm going to be playing as Pauline in part 3, right? That's the, she's going to be saving, right? role reversals.
Yeah, right? That's what you'd think. Or they would have some other way of carrying it forward. And instead, they completely flipped it and said, hey, guess what? We kind of like Galaga and Galaxian and games where you shoot stuff. But we also like Donkey Kong. And now we got this new character, and he's just a little pud boy, and he's going to shoot his he's going to shoot bug spray to kill these bees and creatures and animals that are all trying to steal his turnips or whatever the hell those are down there.
I think they're flowers, but something like that.
And the game is just nothing like Donkey Kong, either of the two previous Donkey Kongs.
No, because it's not a platformer, right? Because the first two are kind of platformers, but this one is all shooter.
Yeah, it's like an action shooter thing.
Right. Platforming.
My favorite part of it is that spray can you get, and then you can just shoot his ass right up to the top and he's dead.
Yeah, when you get Donkey Kong about halfway up because when you're shooting him, he kind of goes up some cables, and when he gets about halfway through, usually on most of the stages, he'll drop I guess it's kind of like fire or something. It's kind of like the equivalent of a fire shot. So that's when it really gets fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That stuff's great. You can totally not cheat, but you really kick his butt.
Blast.
The game has this, they do mix the levels up, but they're not all the same all the time. So there's a different kind of stage each time you're on there shooting it, but it's the one game that's like the least like the original Mario stuff. And I don't have a problem with it. It's more fun. This is more fun today than those other games. I hate to tell you.
Yeah.
Those other games are fine, and they have a really important part in history, and we're going to talk about all that. But I'm telling you, as far as like, what do I want to pick up and just jam through right this second? Three is where it's at, dude. Totally.
It's exciting. It's got, I guess the first couple of ones are a lot of go, stop, calculate, make your move, and so, but not three. Three is all about just dance around, man. Mm-hmm. Dance around and do your thing.
Yeah, it's great.
You can do it, Stanley.
Yep. Here's
Plus the great look on Donkey Kong's face. It's one of the ones that has the most facial animations of any of them. Watching Donkey Kong getting sprayed in the crotch with this spray and him looking, ooh, you can just hear the monkey making the woo noise as he tries to escape your onslaught.
Definitely an uptick in sprite technology that game compared to the others, especially compared to the home versions of the original Donkey Kong, which ranged from ColecoVision looked okay. Atari looked like a turd. That looks so bad.
All we're going to hear as we go further and further into play retro and we dig deeper and deeper, you're going to find out the Atari 2600 conversions were necessary in what they did, but man, it was really just the biggest disappointment for a lot of us.
It was a rough time. Let's go back in time a little bit. Let's build a little ambiance here. All right, so we are in the strictly in the early 80s era here. And you can hear the usual suspects in there. But if you zoom in, you might hear this. Yes. All right, we put our quarter in. Yeah. Another amazing sound. All right, Mario's running. See, this is bringing you all back now. You can hear this. And that's how Mario used to run. It's real stupid.
Yeah. It's the dumbest noise. You've got the worst squeaker noise, right? Squeaker, 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 squeaker. What's wrong with his shoes?
He's got issues. He's got problems. And later he would improve all that stuff as he got to Super Mario Brothers. I'm sorry. Super Mario the one with him? What's the one with him and Luigi?
Oh, no, it's just Mario Bros, right?
Mario Brothers. Yeah. Okay. So that was Mario Brothers. Super Mario Brothers is the side-scroller, which would come later. This all preceded that, of course. Now, a lot of you don't know this, but at the time, there was a rip-off game made. And this game was called, if I can find it, here it is, Crazy Kong.
Yes.
Yeah. And a little bit of history on Crazy Kong. That game was absolutely 100% a ripoff of Donkey Kong and was involved in some of the legal stuff, which we'll get into. But what
I thought it was an officially licensed thing. I thought it was just built on the Crazy Climber hardware. I thought they'd actually
No, these bastards freaking took it and black marketed it.
I'm not saying everybody didn't black market it. I think there was an actual true license at one point for Crazy Kong.
Maybe.
I think.
If there was, I didn't know about it. We got in trouble for
that. That's crazy
one of these.
With a C. You keep spelling it crazy with a K, and I'm pretty sure if you spell it crazy with a K, that one's probably illegal.
That one is probably, and I'm pretty sure that's the one my dad had when I was younger. And I remember him getting in trouble for having it. They had some kind of fine. He didn't know. This happened a lot.
Right.
We would get these board shipments from Japan for his arcade stuff. And once in a while, one of those would be a little weird. And it would be like, oh, I don't know what this is, but whatever. Let's put it on. And it would be total black markety. Like, why do we even have this contraband video game? And one time, and I don't know if it was Crazy Kong or something else, but one of these games got him fined for some amount of dollars. So what I want to do to you is compare the two. This is how Donkey Kong starts. Regular old Nintendo brand Donkey Kong. Okay, we heard this before. It's a normal little start. Does this whole breakdown of the thing, you know? And I guess those are monkey sounds. All right. Then you got this. And we heard this before. And then the walking, right? Now,
right.
What I'm going to do now is this. Hold on. Let me pull this up here. Here is how Crazy Kong plays and starts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh. I kind of like that.
Yeah. That's his running.
Wow. That sounds like it's built on a Pac-Man board or something.
It does kind of. But it also, that's a crazy climber sound effect.
This is a crazy climber sound. It makes sense.
So I think that's maybe what happened. That's your death. That's the death of Jumpman in Crazy Kong.
Yeah. Well, did they call him Jumpman in Crazy Kong?
I don't know what they called him. I don't remember. Probably. And he was all
Jank Man.
Here's the other funny thing. In the original Donkey Kong game, Mario or Jumpman was a little bit dark complexion. They used a darker color for his skin. I guess they were aiming for Italian or whatever, kind of olive skin.
I think that was mostly just the limitation of the hardware, right?
Well, it might have been.
Decision.
It might have been, but all I know is Crazy Kong, the Donkey Kong equivalent, Crazy Kong, is like bright orange. And the little Mario-looking guy is exactly the same, except he's got the whitest skin, like pure white skin on this Crazy Kong character.
If I remember correctly, doesn't Crazy Kong have like a weird neon glow under Donkey Kong? It's like a green or something? It's something funky.
Yeah, it's weird. The color choices are all very strange. Other than that, though, gameplay-wise, almost identical. The hammer's in a different place on the first level.
Like way different or just a little bit different?
A little bit different. Like just placement. Okay. Like the hammer instead
like
of being
a few pixels over.
No, I mean like up a level and to the left instead of the right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and this was true of the home versions of Donkey Kong as well. Like the Atari version had the hammer in a totally different place than the arcade machine did.
Yeah. There was only, I think, of the first stage or the first screen when you play in the Atari, I think there's only one hammer and it's towards the top. And also, I don't think, did the girders bend? I think they did. I'm trying to recall. But one of the things I hated the most was the pixel shifting. Because in regular Donkey Kong arcade, you would just center Jumpman in the center of the ladder, and you would go up. Yeah. If you was off a little bit, you would know it, and you'd adjust, and you move up. Yeah. On the Atari one, it varied from girder to girder, where you would go up. Sometimes you would go kind of to the left of the ladder, and sometimes to the right, and sometimes in the center. And it would be very frustrating.
Yeah, yeah, it's super frustrating. And the game, it was, I think, famously difficult. It's not easy. The barrel jumping is all very timed. A lot of really important hitbox stuff happening. There's no big jump like Mario's used to giving you in something like, you know, Super Mario Brothers or anything since then. He's kind of dopey and moves weird, and it's not, I don't know, not it's, natural.
Miyamoto talks about this later on, like talks about how he thinks it held up, and one of the things that he said that most people complain about or seem annoyed by is his responsiveness. You know, he's kind of clunky. He doesn't just bounce around really well. It was early on.
Only early on, but also arcade games at that time, they had one job, and their job was to sell.
Eat quarters.
Yeah, that's it. So the games were intentionally hard for that reason. Later on, it wasn't until later we started seeing techniques like rubber banding and things like NBA right. Jam and other games where it actually...
Plus that costs us resources.
Yeah, exactly. And back in the day, you just had to be difficult so that somebody would put more quarters in you. Of course, some people got really good at them, would play it all the way to a kill screen. And I would highly recommend, if you've never seen, or even if you want to rewatch the 2007 documentary King of Kong...
Yes.
You should, because it's amazing. It's one of my favorite documentaries ever made. I love it. And it goes pretty deep into not just this world of this game and its records and its record holders, but just will give you an appreciation for what those early arcade challenges were actually like. And it's not nearly as, how do I put this? Like, the games were all about, I'm going to fall, I'm going to die, give me a quarter, I'm back in. Like, that was the whole point. And
right.
I think for whatever reason, that's partly why 3 works for me better, because I don't feel like I'm being jerked around so much with the money.
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting a lot better bang for the quarter when I am playing DK3 as opposed to the first two. I'm going to go ahead and say, we've already kind of alluded to the fact that we love 3 the best. I got to say, Junior, I hate the most.
Well, really? That's interesting. Let's hear about this. Why do you not like Junior?
Oh, I hate Junior because I just don't like the whole climbing thing. I think the first level of DK Junior is just too hard. Now, like the first level of Donkey Kong, it's difficult, but you can get through it pretty quickly, and then you feel like you're making some progress. In Junior... It is so difficult, that first level, is until you really get it down, and it takes a long time to get it down, it's real easy to die. I mean, you may not even get off the first screen at all. I never even seen the second screen for, I don't know how long it was before I saw the second screen in Donkey Kong Jr. It was just ridiculous.
I played some today, and I was very bad at Jr. Here's a little Jr. To rattle your cage just for fun.
Now, I say I hate DK. I hate Donkey Kong Jr. for the... If you said you want to play it, I'd be like, no. But do I also get excited when I see it? Yes, because this is one of the first times we see those classic Mario platforms of that you're going to see later on. And this felt more like that first screen in Donkey Kong Jr. On the right-hand side was the first time that I really ever experienced what I consider the Mario platforming style.
Yeah.
It's platforms, but they're, is there another word for it specifically for Mario?
Platforms, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, they have the mushroom platforms later on, but do they actually call these? But it looks like basically like cliffs with like little grassy knolls across the top. And those are just so iconic. That just changed everything.
Yeah, I agree. It did for me as well. I feel like it wasn't until Mario Brothers, which was a competitive kind of game, sort of.
Right.
That they really started to feel their oats as far as what is this character? Him and the newly discovered Luigi, what is their whole jam? Like, why are they doing what they're doing? Why is this world the way it is? The first taste of what might become sort of Mushroom Kingdom looking business happened there.
And that's because in the first two, Donkey Kong, so in the first one, Jumpman, who is Mario, he is the bad guy because the way the story is presented is he's having an argument with his ape pet because Donkey Kong is his pet, and things go awry, and Donkey Kong takes off with Pauline to the top, and so he's being a jerk, basically. In the second one, he's a real big jerk because he's got Donkey Kong locked up and keeping him away from his love child, Donkey Kong Jr. So Mario is pretty much a jerk in the first two, and then he's not even in the part three.
You're not telling me Jr. is from an unholy union of Pauline and Donkey Kong, are you? What happened there?
What else am I supposed to assume?
I don't know. He is wearing a shirt. What monkey wears
he's
a shirt?
Wearing a shirt.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned.
You make your conclusions. I gave you mine.
So there's an interesting little bit of history here. Shigeru Miyamoto, as you know him.
Miyamoto!
He was supposed to make this game specifically for the U.S. market, and he was supposed to use this radar scope hardware that everybody was sort of using. It's a space shooter game. That thing didn't generate any success in the U.S., and was almost like dead before it started. Right.
Yeah, it was almost the end of Nintendo of America. It was almost it. It was like, we're out.
Yep. That's really, really, that is very true. And originally, the project was going to be a game based on the American cartoon characters you all know as Popeye. You know, Popeye, Olive Oil, Bluto, all those guys.
You got Popeye?
And they eventually made that game. That game got made. And I loved Nintendo's Popeye game. I thought that game was rad. We're going to have to cover it maybe one day on here. But that game didn't happen yet. It was put on hold because there were licensing issues. King Features owned him at the time, so that was kind of tricky.
Yeah.
So Miyamoto replaced this love triangle of characters, you know, Popeye and freaking Olive Oil and Doofus, or Brutus. Bluto, whatever it is.
Everybody says Brutus. I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's Bluto.
Yeah, it's Bluto. I don't know where I get the Brutus. Well, the cartoons were weird. They were back and forth, right?
Right.
Didn't they change sometimes?
I can't even remember now, but, you know, the cartoon was weird anyway. Well, the comic strip was weird. You know, when you start really getting into the tertiary characters of, like, Jeep.
Yeah, dude. Jeep is weird.
In the Gimp, where's her name? I forget. But anyway, it gets weird.
Are there Gimp? Wait, there's a Gimp?
She wasn't the Gimp. Was she the Gimp? I can't remember. It was, she was almost like a pinhead character.
All right. I don't remember her name, but I know you're talking about. I don't remember. Yeah. It's like some name.
Anyway,
the point is,
I don't want to hear anybody cast any stones at the Japanese for weird characters in cartoons when we're sitting on Popeye.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to hear it.
It's a fair point. Here's what he does. He makes this little 16x16 pixel character, calls him Mr. Video.
Yes.
Eventually become Jumpman. We've talked about Jumpman before. And eventually, of course, Mario and the Donkey Kong Jr. and all that stuff. In Donkey Kong Jr. specifically, he is Mario in that. And they named him after Nintendo of America's Italian landlord. This is an old story. Everybody's probably heard this already because he looks just like an Italian, like, plumber guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a plumber guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Mr. Video's silly pet gorilla known as Donkey Kong. The girl was called the Lady in the early days, so there was no Pauline. It was the Lady.
Nobody had names. They basically let just anybody name the first characters in the original. I don't even know. It was mostly just to you know, nail down the instructions. It's like, how are we gonna explain to these Americans? Silly monkey,
mm-hmm.
Donkey Kong. You know, and it's like. And there's the lady. You got to save the lady. That's you know, she's yelling help. She's yelling help. By the way, interesting trivia. I didn't put it in the show notes. I meant to.
Yeah.
In some of the original work, according to an interview with Miyamoto, there was the lady would actually say help. She was saying help. You would hear the arcade sounds, help, help.
Oh.
And they had to cut it out because it sounded like kelp. And people couldn't understand it, so they just left the word balloon in help instead.
Well, that was early on, man. Voice modulation had not come very far yet. We weren't, you know, Sinistar wasn't yelling at us yet. It was going to take a few years before that happened. So check this out. This is pretty interesting. Originally, there was going to be no jump button, so he wouldn't even be Jumpman. He was just going to move with a stick, and that was the sole control. The problem was the radar scope hardware came with a fire button. Because it was this like space shooter thing. So they were like, fine, we'll make him jump. And little did they know, and there's some argument about this, but little did they know they were about to create an entire genre known as platforming.
Right.
Now, it was early, and it's come a long way since then, and it's hard to even compare. But really, that was a fortuitous moment where necessity turned out to be
exactly. It's like we're not taking the button out. Yeah. Miyamoto, we're not taking the button out. And he's like, well, I don't want us to sit there, so we better do something interesting. But he was already being kind of pushed that way anyway. The original concept for Donkey Kong was based on a kind of solving a maze, mm-hmm. trying to move from one place to the next, because we just, you know, we're seeing the success of Pac-Man and all these great maze games. And it's like, what's next? So platforming kind of came about through, you know, happenstance. You know, mm-hmm. here's a stupid button. What are we going to do with it? How about jumping?
Yeah. No, that's totally it. And the fact that they were just forced to work with what they had sometimes yields the coolest results. I think you see this all the time. People using old hardware. So what's the best we can do? Well, we'll do this cool mechanic and then ends up taking off and being this rad thing that everybody remembers. And I just love the idea that this game is trying to capitalize at the time on the popularity of maze-based games, Pac-Man, you said, and there were plenty of others at the time, and instead had to go in this other direction because they had to. They had no other choice. And because they had no other choice, it forced them to innovate, and boom, here we are, you know, all these years later looking at it for what it is. It's crazy.
Miyamoto was so young. I mean, they just basically threw this all on his lap. And if you haven't read any of his interviews, you need to read some stuff about it. If you don't know Miyamoto, I mean, most of you probably do if you're listening, but if you're not a true Nintendo head, just going back and read some of his interviews where he talks about, you know, the DNA of how all this came about is fascinating. He's an interesting fella.
This one thing I did not know, though, okay? Everybody has this old phrase, hey, we're going to the game. Sweet, it's on like Donkey Kong, right? You hear it all the time.
Yes, guess where that came like
from? Chat room, this came from, this is nuts to me. Nintendo trademarked the term, but it didn't happen until 2001. And you might say, why? What is that about? It's because it appeared in Ice Cube's rap song hit at the time. Now I got a wetcha.
Wetcha. Now I got a wetcha.
Yeah. And because
by
of
the
that,
way, don't. Yeah. I he said like, it's unlike Donkey Kong. Don't read the follow up lyrics to that, by the way. It gets a little more raw. But it did blow my mind that Nintendo said, oh, yeah, we're taking that. That's ours. We're taking it.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. Like, even Miyamoto seemed to know kind of in his heart that the gameplay of that game was just kind of okay in passing. He is quoted as saying he hated Donkey Kong so much that he publicly said, quote, Donkey Kong Country proves that players... He's talking about Donkey Kong Country later on. Yeah, yeah. I'm not talking about the original game. He didn't hate that.
Right.
He hated Donkey Kong Country so bad, he says, Donkey Kong Country proves that players will put up with mediocre gameplay if the art is good. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, he dug it. Wouldn't that be the worst? You're the guy who created the original, that was a real bad hurt. Unfortunately for Miyamoto, he kind of got his comeuppance on that one because Donkey Kong Country did fantastic.
Yeah, it did really well.
And he eventually ended up apologizing because, as you know, when you criticize something and it becomes success, you have to go, oh, okay, well, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think that game holds up better than it should, despite, I think the look of that game is kind of ugly in the long term. Like the thing we were doing in the early 90s of capturing 3D renders and then turning them into sprites. Think StarCraft, think this game, Donkey Kong Country. What's the other one that I always think of? The fighting game.
Which one?
Basic Instinct. Killer Instinct.
Oh, Killer Instinct, yes.
They go for this, like, you know, almost a performance capture thing, but they're doing it with 3D models and then using those models as 2D sprites. I think that looks bad these days. Just really doesn't hold up for the era.
It does, but I remember when I saw Donkey Kong Country, I was like, holy Moses.
Oh, yeah, it was
this
awesome.
Is the next
time.
Thing.
Yeah, it was huge at the time. Like, it just, I guess what I'm saying is it's an interstitial tech. Like, it was never going to last super long because we would get to a point where, like, the newer Donkey Kong games, you can beautifully render all of that stuff in real time, in real three dimensions, still play it in a 2D plane and have it look amazing. And this just felt like a stopgap. And there was something at the time that kind of told me that. I didn't know what it was, but the back of my head, I was like, this is cool, but I don't think that lasts. Like, that'll be here for a minute.
I think the problem was, you know, I mean, they basically turned Donkey Kong, the original, into Cranky Kong and, you know, relegated him to, you know, just cranking away. And no even mention of Donkey Kong Jr. Mm-hmm. What happened to Pauline and Donkey Kong love child? Mm. Well, apparently, at least skipped a generation because the primary Kong in Country is the grandson of Cranky Kong.
It's not even the original monkey.
What happened to Junior?
Yeah, and
what happened to the bastard?
Who's wearing the tie now? If I race him in Mario Kart, which monkey is it? You know, I don't know who he is anymore.
Right. Okay. So how'd that go? Yeah, you should be racing the grandson of Cranky Kong, I believe.
Is the grandson the grandson of Cranky Kong then is the son of Donkey Kong Jr.? Do I have that right?
Correct. Yeah, the Donkey Kong in Donkey Kong Country is the son of Jr. Right.
JC Calhoun in the chat says it best. The Donkey Kong continuity is a mess. You're not wrong.
Well, it's pretty straight except for a couple of outliers. Like, I think Donkey Kong 64 kind of wanted to play it a little different, but then they looked at him and said, nah, that's not canon. And so, but it's interesting because that was the only true, you know...
Well, the look of him
Junior really kicked Mario's butt.
No,
right?
He totally did.
To complete the game, you have to defeat Mario to the death.
Yeah, but at some point, like, I don't know when this decision was made at Nintendo, but they decided from a lore standpoint, sorry, Donkey Kong, whichever generation you are no longer the big bad in Mario's life. It's now,
right.
It's now this giant lizard, you know, guy. So enjoy.
How can you compete with that guy?
Bowser.
How can you compete with that guy?
Bowser's the new guy. Although even early on, who was it? King Koopa in the first game or in
right
first scrolling game?
So I mean, yeah, you're mostly dealing with yeah.
But Donkey Kong had been relegated. He's like, yeah, you're off doing your own thing now. So he does his own thing now. Who's Diddy
Kong?
Donkey Kong's
not really a bad guy, even in any of them. He's not really a bad guy. He's just he's a gorilla that's. Stupid and stubborn.
But do you think that him and Pauline, fully consensual relationship, you think that all was fine?
Oh, absolutely. If Pauline wanted to get away, I mean, come on. She wasn't even in a cage. She could have just walked on down.
That's true. I always think she's in a cage, but she's not, is she?
She's not in a cage. Now, yeah. Donkey Kong in 2 is in a cage.
Yeah, he's caged up. And in 3, he's just letting it loose, man. Just hanging it out there for the whole world to squirt at. Here's some other funny stuff.
That's the reason why I like Cousins. They're totally unrelated to all this other BS.
Damn straight.
They got their own storylines.
So Diddy was a sidekick, says the chat. He was never a part of the family, I guess. Just a sidekick monkey, right?
Right. Wasn't he friends with like a Banjo Kazooie?
I don't think so.
Yes.
Diddy Kong? Really? I don't think so.
Yeah. Isn't that how that works? Because they were in like, didn't he start in... Well, Diddy Rare, Kong Racing, if
Rare,
I remember correctly.
Rare, yes, but that's because Rare was owned by Nintendo at the time.
Right.
And I think that crossover happened there because it just made sense to them, but I don't think there was a crossover in the game. I don't remember sure.
When we were sourcing all this material for today's show, I would have never have guessed that the primary talking point would have been the Donkey Kong lineage.
Yeah. I mean, I knew we
so
would.
So I'm down with it.
I mean, the Mario one's obvious, and we've seen where it's gone. Right. He's now the most recognizable character in the world, arguably one of the most valuable IPs in the history of the planet. Like, it's crazy how this stuff, how far it's come and the amount of time that it's come. But
right,
Donkey Kong and his rocky history is fascinating, at the very least. All right, so there's some interesting points back then that happened. In 1982... there was a big lawsuit. This came from Universal. And this may not surprise people, but they were pissed because they own the rights to King Kong in its in any of its sort of, you know, cinematic use.
And, yeah, they just released the 1975 version of their King Kong, right?
That would be the newest one they had, yeah. So it would have been a couple, right. You know, 6-7 years old at that point. That's
right.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about it in context.
They were probably cranking those things out on videotapes, like, oh, come on, yeah. Nintendo.
They claim it was too similar to that character, but it was already in the public domain years ago. So this meant, meaning the original film. So the case was dropped, and Universal had to pay Nintendo's legal fees for that thing. And it now, that basically made Universal a Kong donkey.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. That's what the kids say.
Yeah, they're a bunch of such donkeys, silly donkeys.
Now here's the funny thing. Miyamoto with all his input is one thing, but they actually outsourced the creation of DK1 to another company.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know
the actual coding, right? The actual putting on boards and chips and
because they were still busy doing like card games and stuff at Nintendo. They weren't full blown, you know, what we think of as Nintendo today. And so they subbed that out. So in all technicality, Donkey Kong Jr. is the game that you could say was the first in-house Mario/Donkey Kong game made by Nintendo.
Right.
They did that entirely themselves.
They stole it.
Yeah. based on the success of the previous game. There's a lot of messy stuff in there, man. It's not the most clean deal. I mean, they produced and sold Nintendo or sold to Nintendo somewhere between 8,000 and 20,000 circuit boards for Donkey Kong.
Right.
But it's believed Nintendo went on to copy an additional 80,000 boards from that batch without
what
their permission.
Bunch of jerks.
Yeah. They did not get their permission. This is Nintendo who will go after you for putting an animated freaking Goomba on your webpage. Like, that's how litigious they are these days. But back then, they were pulling some dark business.
Maybe that's where they learned it from. Maybe there's like, oh, you know what's really bad?
Mm.
Doing that like we did back in the day.
Yeah, pretty crazy, though.
I think you doth protest too much, Nintendo.
I agree. All right, so let's jump forward again to Stanley the Bugman and what that deal was. He was known from the Game & Watch game Greenhouse as well as the Fumigator, which is what I called him when I was growing up for some reason.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong Sr. has taken refuge in his greenhouse and is now up to Stanley to stop Kong from stirring up any more insects that will soon destroy his flowers. Stanley is an exterminator. Expertise saves his flowers and defeats Kong Sr. with his bug spray. That sounds dumb, but I'm telling you, as we said at the top of the show, it's the best of those first three games. I'm sorry. It just is.
I agree. I'm going to give a little personal experience from this game. I talk about it on just about all the gaming podcasts we do. There's a place in video gaming that I refer to as flow.
Yeah.
And that's FLOW. And this game flows, unlike 1 and 2, whereas calculate, move, strategy. No, this is all about just you can kind of see the bugs are swirling. They pretty much always follow the same pattern, and you just have to jump in and just hit that button, hop to the top fast as you can, and just keep moving on.
That's excellent. It's absolutely true. Now, I mentioned earlier that Mario and Donkey Kong aren't really the nemesis to each other that they used to be. But if you played any of those Mario versus Donkey Kong games, started on the DS, I think there hasn't been one in a while, but 3DS maybe had one. Did you play these? They were great.
Yeah, I did.
They were kind of puzzle games, sort of.
Right.
And Mario had these little robot dolls that he created, and you would use a bunch of them like lemmings to like foil Donkey Kong's bullshit. It's an awesome game. It was great. It was a very cool little game. Yeah. And I want to say the 3DS version was my favorite, but when did this come out? 2000. Oh, it says right there, 2004. And if you never played those, totally worth trying to get those somewhere.
Totally a cool. I like that series. I enjoy Donkey Kong going against. It always feels like good fun, right? You always feel like at the end of the day, it's like we're gonna be all right. We're going to be all right, buddy.
Do you want to hear some crazy audio of Mr. Rogers trying to learn how to play this game back in 1980-something?
I saw that, and I'm totally excited about hearing this. I hear there's a special guest star at the end of this video other than Mr. Rogers, American TV kids show host.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Some dude.
Give me some.
But here's a chunk of it. This is basically him getting some of the basics of the play and then getting something very wrong. Okay? So I love Mr. Rogers, but you kind of effed the end of this up here and listen.
Oh, no.
Maybe I could try this. I've never tried this kind of a game before.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
This makes the man go this way.
Mm-hmm.
For climbing ladders, you go up.
Uh-huh.
Then when you want to go this way, you push it that way. And this is a jump button when you don't have the hammer.
So he's a carpenter. That's why he'd be using a hammer, isn't it?
No, he's not a carpenter, dude!
He is a carpenter. At that time, he was.
Was he? I thought he was always a plumber. No?
No, no. You cut it off before the best part. But yeah, keep playing that. But yeah, he was originally a carpenter. They didn't turn him into a plumber until later.
Oh, all right. I didn't know that. I didn't capture the rest because I was just a dude getting money out of the machine.
Oh, you didn't capture the rest? Oh, then you missed Keith David.
That was Keith David?
He collects the coins.
Oh, how did I miss? I didn't know that.
Not the kids.
Okay. There's a dude what collects coins.
Yes.
Where's the video of this? I'm going to play it again. Hold on. Where did you put this? Was it in our Discord?
It should be at the bottom of the sources.
Hold on. Okay, here it is. I found it. Let me click this real quick. We'll give this another shot. Okay. There's no volume. Okay. Now we have volume.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna skip
right
ahead.
Here.
Okay. Okay, here comes the guy to get the change.
Sure, why don't you stand over there? You'll see it better.
That's him.
Excuse me. He says, I'm Keith.
Okay.
What?
You get the coins from it, huh?
Now we'll collect all the money you put in.
Oh, now I can hear it. I didn't get it the first time. It's totally Keith David changing the money out. That's fantastic. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, another video game voice legend.
Yeah.
Remember him in Halo? Yeah. He had no idea he was heading for that, did he?
No, that or Mass Effect or a million other games. He's in tons of stuff.
He's an arbiter.
So this would have been after he was in The Thing. That's a trip.
Right.
That's
right,
a trip.
Right. Man. And he's on Mr. Rogers' neighborhood collecting coins.
Yeah.
From the Donkey Kong. By the way, that particular Donkey Kong, was that one exploitable by the straw exploit? I think there was I think originally the Donkey Kong arcade machines were shipped. Either was it the red? I think it was the red console.
Mm.
And the way the coin slots were in it, you could use a straw to kind of jimmy around the edge and get like, you know, up to 99 quarters in there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They fixed it later on.
Oh, they must have, yeah. So we never had a Donkey Kong in the collection. But like when my dad was running these arcades and had these machines everywhere, never had a Donkey Kong among it. We had other Nintendo stuff, but that was the only one that we didn't. And the reason we didn't, I found out later, was because they were outrageously expensive compared to other arcade machines. Very expensive. Yeah. And this is like before their versus machines where they had like 10 Nintendo titles on them and all that, where you'd at least get a little more value for your buck.
Right.
But they were, I don't know, $6,000-$7,000, something crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look.
Back
look,
then?
Nintendo president Yamauchi, mm-hmm. he knew what he had. And he was always, you could call him a jerk. But he was really good at spotting talent.
He was really savvy.
And he was really good. He was really good at seeing when he had a hit. And he was really good about making deals and putting as much money in his pocket as possible.
Yep, that's true.
He was good at it.
I also forgot how good Keith David was in Saints Row 3 and 4.
Yes.
He was the president in 3, I think. It was real dumb.
But I just love the fact that he showed up to collect the coins. And by the way, it was odd to me because, you know, I wasn't like you. I didn't have the inside scoop of arcade machines. But the box he pulled out of it felt very much Maker to me because he pulled out like a wooden box that was just the coins that's dropped into. I always imagined that it was like a plastic container in there or some kind of metal container. But like somebody just at workshop had, you know, made a box, a wooden box, and put it underneath there right underneath the coins. And they just fell in there.
No, that's funny because some of them were metal, some of them were wood. A lot of them were just straight up particle board glued together. That one that they showed in there was one of those glued particle board boxes, and that was pretty common. And the Nintendo stuff always had that. I don't know why they. I guess it was. I don't know if it was going to be. I don't know if those machines were lighter or heavier as a result, but it seemed like the ones that used metal used thin, you know, shape steel stuff, and therefore it weighed less, whereas like the particle board stuff just weighed a ton. I don't know if you've ever had to move like a missile command. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
You've ever had to move a missile command?
My dad's
know
big,
what I'm talking about.
My dad's big innovation at the time is he put wheels on the backs of these machines. So when you tilted, it basically became its own dolly. And nobody else was doing that.
Scott,
so it was actually really
Scott
cool.
Scott's still pushing in, occasionally pushing in the hernia he got from missile command, right?
Just, yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to push it. Sometimes the little bulbous muscle starts coming out of the hole and you got to shove it back in there.
Oh, that's my missile command hole. Like,
that's my missile command hole. all right. Check this out. Some DK3 sound. I didn't play that yet, so enjoy it. I don't think I did. Here you go. See, that's you spraying. That little...
Yeah.
I think I died already. Yeah, I died already. And that's Mario. That's that's Donkey Kong getting up there and smacking the beehives or the bug hives.
Yes, they don't like it. They don't like the hornet's nest. Do not care for the Donkey Kong to do that.
No, they don't like that at all. But why would they? I don't like it.
I'm kind of on Stanley's side. You know, he's trying to do his little greenhouse in there, and there's a giant, you know, gorilla... You know, climbing in the rafters. You got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So here's an important note, I believe. If you want to play these today, where do you get them? It's one of the things listeners have asked. They're like, we want to hear from you guys every week about where you can play this stuff. Now, there's the usual, you know, MAME emulators and, you know, the stuff we could say every stinking week. But, of course...
That's how I play.
Right, sure. And working versions of the consoles that got ports, that's an option. I know a guy who has a working arcade version of the game in his house, and he's playing that just fine. But emulation and that sort of thing is probably the way you're going to have the most luck getting it. But it's also, the first game anyway, I don't know why it's not a trilogy and just all in one port, but the Arcade Archives version of Donkey Kong, the original Donkey Kong, is on Switch for $8. Does not include Junior or 3, which is a little bit of a bummer, and I think that's a little high for a game that old. You know?
But they're also $8 a piece. You can buy 2 and 3. For all 3 is $21. I looked at that. I'm like,
Oh, they're separate. I didn't realize. Okay. Well, that's not a that's just a little too high for 3 very old, you know, and what are they about $12,000 a piece? They're just tiny little things.
I can't imagine that I would spend $8 worth of quarters to play the 2 on my Switch. Even at that rate, I don't think I could play it for that low.
I would pay that if they gave me 3 cartridges. I could play in.
There's
a
only
SNES
one reason to play Donkey Kong. Either you're going to review it for a retro show like we're doing, or you're going to try to hit that high score. And I don't know. There's just not enough joy in it for me.
Same.
Knowing that, you know, there's so many people way better than me. Right. That'd be the only game you play.
The thing holds a really important place in gaming history, but I don't want to play it today. I do want to play 3, though. I'm in the mood. I like 3.
I will occasionally pull. That's always the one I look for. When I do go back to say I want to play Donkey Kong, 3 is the one I go for. It's mechanically got that flow. Even the music.
It's just mechanically satisfying. Forget about the IP. Forget that it's Nintendo for a minute. The one that's the most sort of just fun to pick up and play is that game. And it's probably because it's a shooter that came out during the shooter phase of hype. And it's their way of doing it. And it's a unique thing, but it's still just a shooter. Like, you're still...
Yeah.
You're shooting bugs and spraying up the ass of a damn monkey. It's great. It's great.
It's really the fact that they're giving us, this is the game mechanic, this is what you're doing. You're spraying a donkey monkey in the crotch.
A donkey monkey in the crotch
with a bug spray, and he's making all these faces, and we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to focus on it. We're not going to talk about it. You're just doing it.
Yeah. If you go back and play 1, may as well play this version. Listen to this garbage on the Atari 2600. This was the original Donkey Kong port, and you can just hear how bad it is by the sound. Oh, my gosh, dude. Really? Okay, let's see what the jump sounds like. Hold on. He's getting there. Here we go. Ugh. It may as well be it's like a desktop calculator. It's freaking horrible.
Right.
I know at the time.
Which is what the Game & Watch was, right?
Right. And we'll have episodes where we talk about either specific titles that were important on the Atari 2600 or the device itself.
Was important. It was important, and it damn near ruined us all, but.
Yeah.
It had its place.
I did have its place. They still publish under that name. It's not the company it used to be. I was watching Blade Runner 2049, and the original Blade Runner famously had big giant Atari logos in it as product placement.
Right.
And 2049 went ahead and did it. They put a big old ass Atari logo, even though it means nothing now to most people. I think young people seeing it are like, what? What's that? They don't know.
Right. What is that?
What even is it? All right. Well, there you go. 3 of the most influential or most important series in the history of games, possibly. It's hard to argue.
Because it's hard to argue with something that basically created platforming through necessity. So, I mean...
Yeah, and people still making those. People still making great platforming games, and the indie scene is rife with them, and they all owe just a little bit of that to this lineage, and I think it's great.
Don't tell Nintendo that. God, they'll try to come and collect.
Yeah, they'll try to sue everybody. All right, well, we won't let them, because now we're going to play Guess Our Game.
Destroy it.
Yeah, that's right. A little game that carried over from our Boop Show days called Guess My Game. And I'm going to start. I've got a game here, Brian, I'm going to play some audio from November 2001.
And well, that's kind of late for our retro series, but yeah, I'll take it. I'll accept it.
It'll sound retro-y to you. At least I think so. So good luck with this one. Let's see how you do. Here we go. Where is it? Here it is.
Oh, that does sound retro.
Yeah. Any ideas?
Wait. No, that sounds a little familiar. Hold on a second. We had it for a second. I can see it.
Yeah. Let's see if the chat... Chat's getting it. Chat, how you doing? Nope, not Mega Man. No one's got his chat yet.
Stop saying what the chat room's saying.
Okay, the chat room's not saying anything right now.
Is this at the arcade or console?
This is console, specifically handheld. There's your next, that's your other hint.
Interesting. That is pretty complex for a handheld, even in 2001.
Yeah.
Oh.
Choplifter chat room's the worst.
It's always Choplifter.
It's always Choplifter.
It's always Choplifter.
Give up yet?
Wow. Is it a brawler?
Nope. There is some verses in it, but it's not a brawler. It's not a fighter.
It feels like a brawler, though. Are you sure?
Positive.
Okay.
I owned this, played it quite a bit.
Interesting.
Here's your next hint. It's sports related.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
2001, handheld, sports related, has a jointy vibe to it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Is it some kind of Olympics?
It is not. No.
I yield to your superior game hiding skills.
Well, thank you for that. It is Super Mario Tennis for the Game Boy
Color. Oh, I should have known. Just because I know who you are, should have known.
I liked me
that
some
it was Mario Tennis.
I liked some Mario Tennis back in the day. I thought it was good stuff.
Good.
Speaking of
Nintendo. Here's a clap for you. Good job.
Thank you. I could have told you it was Nintendo, because today was all Nintendo, it seems like, so I could have said that, but I didn't.
Yeah, I definitely felt like it was Nintendo, but I couldn't place it.
Well, I'm going to play yours now. Let's see if I can snag this out of the sky. Let's see here. Here we go. Oh, give me a year. What are we looking at?
The year is 1985, and we're at the arcade.
Sweet. I just went and saw another showing of Back to the Future. I've got a big Slurpee in my hand, and I'm on my way to the arcade.
In your pants?
In my pants, and this is how I'm going to listen to it. Here we go.
I know what they're going to say in the chat room.
I don't know what this is. Sounds like is it a shooter?
Either. I was going to say Choplifter. I almost picked Choplifter just to hit that off.
Oh, did they? I'm not actually looking because I don't want to be tipped off here. It sounds like a rapid shootery deal.
There you go. Yeah. It's definitely a shooter game.
This isn't Berserk.
Nope.
Side-scroller shooter?
No, it's up, down, vertical.
Oh, is this a 1942?
That's a good guess, but not, no.
Damn it. Okay, I give up. I have no idea.
Okay, some of the few people did get in the chat room, Tonda Ghosts are nailing it, and so the Wraith also right behind Tonda. It is Commando.
Oh, Commando. I played a lot of Commando. How did I not remember that?
I did too.
Oh, man.
The Commando.
Hold on. Commando, the arcade version, right? Commando.
Correct.
Hold on a second. I want to see this. Commando Arcade. My guess is this doesn't look as cool as I remember it looking.
Oh, it looks so cool.
Oh, yeah. See, this isn't that cool.
Now, what are you talking about? That's a fantastic game.
I mean, I agree. It just looks like garbage.
It looks like poo.
Yeah,
looks
I mean, like, you know.
Garbage poo.
It's not too bad. A lot of games back then, this is what they looked like in 84, 85. They were starting to get better with bigger color palettes and stuff. And this reminds me of like, well, we've done it before, the Temple of Doom one, Indiana Jones game. Something about this color palette and the way it scrolls reminds me of that game, that era of gaming, I guess.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, you know what? I could go for a dual stick Commando revival.
Let's do it.
Why isn't that being made? Can someone get that
Sure probably someone has made some kind of new Commando that I'm not thinking of. Let me see.
And this wasn't based on the movie Commando, right?
No.
Okay. Oh, look at that guy taking a break and drinking from his little canteen. That's fantastic. Well, now I kind of want to play Commando.
Commando 2022. What is this?
No way, really?
The Commando. What is this? There's a movie. Don't look at that. Gross.
Oh, I don't want that. Commando video game.
Remake.
Is there any kind of anything? Let's see.
Wikipedia. Oh, Commandos 2 HD Remastered. That's interesting. 2019.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had no idea that was
Commandos,
a thing.
Commandos, though. I don't think that's the same.
It's interesting. Commando, highly influential game, popularized the run-and-gun shooter genre, says this. That might be a fun one for us to hit in the future. Some of these Guess My Games might become topics. Who knows?
I did that on the first episode, actually. Yeah. I predicted our second episode with the one I did.
Well, neither of us get points. It's totally fine.
Uh-uh.
Nope. Not a damn thing came out of that. But we are going
to
do this.
Welcome to the Treasure Room.
I love that clip.
Do you like that one?
Welcome
that was my
to the
fave.
Treasure Room.
Let's do some emails. Listener emails, playretroshow@gmail.com. That's playretroshow@gmail.com. By the way, it's the same as our Twitter account, playretroshow. So either direction you want to go there, that'd be great. Here's what Michael says. Firstly, I would like to say I love and listen to all the Frog Pants shows. It's top tier in its ability to get me through the drudgery that is my job. Thank you. Well, you're welcome. Aww. Says, now I get to the motivation that caused me to write into the show for the very first time ever. Or a show.
Oh, I feel a big old butt coming on.
Well,
go ahead.
We could be getting a butt. Please remember that I said I love all the shows. All right. That's what he says. He's preparing us. He says, you were way off base when you said Phantasy Star 4 was when battery saves were coming into use. This is very wrong. He says, Phantasy Stars 1, 2, and 3 all had battery saves. I also remember that the gold Zelda cartridge on the original NES had battery saves as well. If I have misunderstood what you said due to my dumb job, I have attacked you based on my misunderstanding, and I am truest sorry. Thank you for reading my rant. Still love the shows, Michael. Well, Michael, no, he's Michael, right. I had it in my head that was like some early version of that, and you're not the first. Other people written in and said, look, there were other battery saves on other cartridges. That was not the first.
Right.
It was maybe notable because it was so expensive and huge and all that.
We should probably, like, when we're talking, I've been trying to do it more and more, but when I do my off-the-cuff remarks, I probably need to... I've been trying to do it more this episode. Whenever I state something that sounds like a fact and is a fact, I try to state my source, this interview, that interview. Whereas whenever I have off-the-cuff personal opinions of what I think happened, I probably should be saying stuff like, oh, you know, well... It feels like it might be this or that. So apologies.
Well,
thank you for calling us out.
Our first and only fact checker is now Michael. So Michael, thank you for being that for us. We really appreciate it. It's very nice that you were able to do that for us.
There's something that is different about this show than any other shows we do. Uh-huh. And that is, unlike a lot of other things, there's a lot of room for revisionist history, misunderstandings in stories and lore around some of these games because they weren't all chronicled heavily. A lot of the things are even people being interviewed later on misremembering things. Mm-hmm. And so we try to get the source the best we can and quote it. But there's always going to be things, right?
Yeah,
and
no,
I appreciate
totally,
people.
It's totally
us
fine.
We're wrong.
You guys should tell us anytime you hear us say something you think is bull crap, or you have some information we don't have. Please let us know.
I think I said that the fantasy. I think I said on that show, that same show. You didn't call this out. I found out like 5 seconds after I did it, after I woke up from my COVID fever, that the guy who did the Reebok pump was not the guy I said. And on top of that, he wasn't the same guy that came up with the one of the other things that Sega said. So I retracted that on the Twitter.
Misattribution can happen, man. It can always happen. And when it does, we're happy to swallow our pride and admit it and look for... We have no pride. Right. We have none.
We have no pride. Yeah, we have pride in making good content, but you're not going to hurt my feelings by telling me I did something wrong.
No, not at all. Apparently the first version of this, according to... this Tedium article, which talks about saved but not forgotten. It's all about the history of battery saves. Someone in the chat put that in there. JC Calhoun, thank you for that.
Nice.
He said, these came out for a while and went away. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, here we go. Home video game systems like Atari 2600 and Nintendo Entertainment System stored their games on cartridges containing ROM chips, read-only memory. If a game developer wanted to offer more than a simple arcade game, there wasn't anything for progress to be saved on. The solution was passwords. Remember those? Those were a thing.
Yes.
It appears the very first one, according to this, Nintendo's first two password-backed games were Kid Icarus and Metroid. The first game out of Nintendo was batteries... that had batteries was Legend of Zelda.
Yes.
Let's see. In Japan, it was on floppy disk. Came to North America on cartridges. Instead of passwords, it featured a true save system. Zubba zubba, long-lasting batteries. Zubba zubba. Let me just keep going down here. So that wasn't the first one, though. There was some stuff in a Japanese console before that called Pops and Chips. Or Pop and Chips. Ooh, I hate that. I hate that so bad. I don't even know what that is. I hate it. I don't even want to know what that is. Anyway, so yes, we screwed that up. We got it wrong. Thanks for the resource.
And you know, and it really feels like a Nintendo thing to do because they were always more about the software than the hardware they were shipping out. Hardware being the consoles, the software being the things they ship on the cartridges, which was their long game. And in order to keep things slim on the hardware side, they would sometimes, you know, make their cartridges a little bit beefier with some things that would help enhance the console. So it seems a very Nintendo thing to do.
Yeah.
And you're welcome to write in at playretroshow@gmail.com when I get that wrong.
Anytime you want to write in, you can. playretroshow@gmail.com. And don't forget, the show is now brought to you by you.
Yes.
If you are a patron, you'll never hear a commercial on here. You'll never hear any other stuff other than stuff you want from us, including bonus content every week. And other cool things coming. So check it out. Patreon.com/playretro. That's patreon.com/playretro. If you're looking for the site, we're at frogpants.com/playretro, and you'll find links to everything there. I think that's going to do it. Brian, do you have anything to add before we get out of here?
Did we say what we were doing up next?
No, we didn't. Let's tell them. Okay. This came out of my head because I don't know why I'm interested in this, but I totally am. I was thinking the other day about games that were successful in bringing a product-based game out and have it still be fun, even though the product was kind of a lame. So, for example, Cool Spot. You guys remember this? NES or Super NES?
Yes, 7-Up. 7-Up.
Master System had a version for some reason. Game Gear had a version.
Right.
The Genesis version was kind of the... Everyone thought was the better one. I don't remember why, but... Anyway, you know, literally, 7-Up's stupid little red spot on the bottle was now a character in a game.
Yeah, and I think it was the N64 version that I had that I like so much. If I remember correctly.
It's weird though that worked. It actually worked and was good. They were good platformers. Speaking of platformers, and there's plenty of examples like this that are good and bad. There's that Pepsi Man game. There's that weird Dorito game. Remember the Burger King 360 stuff. Sneaking
The Burger King stuff was the creepiest, but the Dash of Destruction Doritos game at the arcade was amazing.
It's really weird. So we're going to hit it from that angle. We're going to talk about Cool Spot as kind of a jumping off point, but I think there's plenty there. So there'll be a meaty discussion next week regarding this kind of thing, and we don't see it as much anymore. You see a lot of tie-ins with movies and TV and stuff, but you don't see as much from a product standpoint.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing that happened for such a short time that just made sense. It's like, where do you want to pump the marketing money? Let's pump it where the kids are. Where are the kids at? They're playing video games. Let's make something good. Yeah. Okay.
They should buy more 7-Up is what they said.
Right. I guess all that money moved to the TikToks, I suppose. But there was an amazing moment for a moment.
Yeah, for a hot second.
That we had this.
And that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about that. That'll do it for us. Thank you all for listening. And do check us out next week because we'll be back at it with that topic and more.
Yes.
We'll see you then.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Mm-hmm. the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.